that's time to learn. Right, let's go back to the beginning of this nevuah, which is Perek Bet Pasuk Chav Zayin. I think at the end of class last week, we sort of read through this piece of the nevuah of the Isha Elokim, correct? Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about who the Isha Elokim was and why the why Chazal identified him. Is that correct? We talked about the. Did we discuss that here?
I don't know. I don't think we did. Well, yeah, because I wrote down
I get so confused. Elkanah. Okay,
no,
good.
We did say that.
Yeah. Okay, I get confused between Monday and Wednesday.
Because
so
you said Chazal, they're not like anonymity.
Anonymity, right. We talked about the approach of Chazal to anonymous personalities. Correct. Good.
That should mean that you cannot give tzedakah anonymously.
No, that's not what it means. But... it just means that Chazal have a different way of approaching the interpretation of Tanakh. But
inquiring minds
want to
know.
We're going to go back to the beginning. Let's read a couple of psukim. Vayomer elav, Koamar Hashem, Haniglo nigleiti al beit avicha, biyotam b'mitzrayim levet paro. ובאחור אותו מכל שבטי ישראל לי לכהן. One of the issues in Tanakh, is in Chumash and in Navi altogether, is that our perception of sentence structure and pasuk division of verses do not parallel each other. So what in English is a sentence isn't necessarily equal to a pasuk, or sometimes a pasuk can be two sentences, and sometimes one sentence can straddle two or more psukim. So when you're translating, it's something to bear in mind. But you have essentially one phrase here.
So that's all a Tanakh like that.
It's all a Tanakh like that. Because our concept of sentence grammatically is different than the Tanakh's concept of a pasuk. A mishpat, a sentence in Hebrew grammar is a sentence. Has to have the same rules as a sentence in English. But a pasuk is not equal to a sentence.
That's interesting.
A pasuk is arbitrary, right?
I mean, if that's arbitrary, it's just, it follows a different set of rules than English grammar.
It has a different
purpose. Right, and it has different grammatical or syntactical rules than to grammar.
It has stops, it has mid stops, it has commas, it has phrases.
Would you call it poetic license?
No, it's just, we wouldn't call it poetic or license or anything else. It's just that's the way it is. We would make an assumption, but our assumption is incorrect. We would make an assumption that a pasuk is equal to a sentence. But that assumption is incorrect.
Who imposed that?
The sentence equals pasuk?
No. Who arranged it this way?
Well, the psukim are part of the tradition. Psukim are part of the text when they're written. Divide them into psukim. But
there's an assumption.
In other words, our assumption is incorrect. Our assumption is that a pasuk has to equal a sentence. But it's not. The assumption is wrong.
Right, but all I'm asking is when it was written, they assigned.
The verse division is set up by when the text is written. You write
okay.
it. Okay. All right. That was just an aside. Haniglo nigleiti al beit avicha biyotam b'mitzvayim. There's a hey at the beginning of the word haniglo, which is typically the hey hasha'ela, the question. Right? Did I? So it's either a It's either a rhetorical question or a question. Haniglo nigleiti al beit avicha, did I or did I not appear, make myself known to, reveal to your father's household? Your father's household would be a reference to? Who would be the...
Aaron,
right? The first, the great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of any Kohen. If you're talking about the origins of Kohuna, b'chorato mikol shiftei Yisrael li l'chohen, the choice of him as to be my Kohen, you're talking about Aaron. So I revealed myself to your father's household, biyotam b'mitzrayim levet paro, while they were still in Egypt, in the house of Paro. Uvachoroto mikol shiftei Yisrael li lechohen, and I chose him from all of the tribes of Israel, for to me to be a kohen. La'alotam isbechi, laktir ketoret, lasete fod lefanai, to do all of the things that a kohen does, namely, to bring the offerings, to go on my mizbeach, to go to bring Torah, to wear the ephod, symbol of kahuna. Vetna lebet avicha et kol ishei b'nei Yisrael, and to your household, your father's house, I gave as compensation all of the offerings of b'nei Yisrael. The purpose of the choice, the purpose of the mission and the mandate, was to go on my mizbeach, was to bring the Torah, was to wear the ephod, was to be the kohen, was to serve the people, to serve God. Compensation was the Ishei Yisrael, but you have reversed that. You have degraded my offerings and mincha, which I had commanded, by giving more honor to your children than to me. V'tachabed et banecha mi meni. So one of the observations that the Mefarshim struggle with in this introduction is the reference to the choice of Aaron as Kohen way, way, way back. Why is that problematic? What's the issue here? What's he saying? He's saying, your status as a Kohen, v'chor to mikol shiftei Yisrael, goes all the way back to
Aaron,
who was chosen for this task, when and where?
At the snare.
What does it say?
In Mitzrayim.
In Mitzrayim.
In the house of
Paro. Haniglo nigleti al bet avicha biyotam b'mitzrayim levet Paro. When your ancestors were still slaves in Egypt, I came and revealed myself and chose Aaron, your great 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 grandfather, from amongst all the tribes of Israel, to be my Kohen. The problem is that our understanding of the process as Aaron's coming into the Kohuna in Chumash does not seem to reflect that fact.
That God chose him?
Where and when is the issue? We know that Aaron is chosen as the Kohen. The where and when is the complication, because it would seem, right, it would seem from here that the choice of Aaron as a Kohen is set in place in Mitzrayim. So that's a contention that I want to explore. When do we find references to Aaron as the Kohen? When does he assume that role?
When they don't permission.
Well, so that's the question. Right. There are certain givens that we assume, and we're going to challenge those too. We're going to take a look at this. And to do so, I want to work our way somewhat backwards. Let's start from where's the earliest place we know for sure that Aaron is clearly designated to be the Kohen, to wear the ephod, to serve the Mizbeach, serve on the Mizbeach. Where do we find the most explicit references to Aaron as the Kohen chosen to wear the ephod? Let's put it in terms of the Navi here. Aaron is chosen, laset et ephod, to wear the ephod.
In the Mishkan?
The beginning of Peshat. What?
Leviticus.
No, not Leviticus. That would not work. That would be a little bit too late. Where is the Mishkan set in place, and where does Aaron's role in the Mishkan get defined?
After the sin of the Golden Calf.
Oh, so that's what we're going to have to explore. So let's. Truma is the building of the Mishkan. We're getting warmer.
We're batting.
Well, right. Tetzaveh is Big De Kahuna, so if we want to look at the role of the Big De Kahuna, remember the symbol of the Kohen is that he wears the ephod. So that ephod is explicitly described in the beginning of Parashat Tetzaveh, starting with the end of Shmos, the end of Perek Chav Zayin.
And this one's
95. No, no, end of Perek Tez, end of the beginning of Parashat Tetzaveh.
Oh no, which pasuk? Wait, you said Chav Chet?
End of Chav Zayin, beginning of Chav Chet. We'll get to in a moment.
So it's attached to the Ebenezer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's 95. You're right.
I was right. Yeah.
I guess I should pull up one of those and be able to follow pages. But anyway, ve'ata titzaved bnei Yisrael v'kru elacha shemen zayit zach katit lamaor la'alot ner tamid. This is the beginning of Parashat Tetzaveh, in which Moshe is told to instruct bnei Yisrael to take shemen zayit for the purpose of lighting the menorah. That's the end. That's the beginning of Parashat Tetzaveh. Parsha Truma deals with the construction of the Mishkan and all of its complexities, and all of its structures. Perek Chaf Chet.
In.
Right where we were.
V'ata
hakrev elecha et Aharon achicha. Bring Aaron, your brother, close to you. Call him up. Ve'et banavito, his children with him. Mitoch b'nei Yisrael, chosen from amongst the tribes of Israel, l'chahanoli. That's precisely the phrase that we found, that we read in Shmuel. V'achorotom mikol shivtei Yisrael l'chahenli. I chose him from amongst all the tribes of Israel to serve me as, to be the kohen to me. That was exactly the phrase that the Navi used, correct? So here it says, V'ata akrev elecha et Aaron achicha l'chahanoli. That sounds like this is a moment of
choosing.
Designation, of choosing. He is now being chosen as the Kohen. Aharon, Nadav, Avihu, Elazavi, Tamar, b'nei Aaron. Aaron and his four sons. V'asita bigdei kodesh l'Aaron achicha, special clothing that you will make for Aaron, your brother, l'chavod l'tifaret. These clothing are a symbol of kavod, honor, of glory. Yata tedaber kol chachma lev asher min leitivu chachma v'asut bigdei Aaron l'kadosho l'chahanoli. Second time. Clothing that are made for Aaron to sanctify him, to designate him, L'chahanoli, in order to be my kohen, ve'ela abgadim ashiyasu choshen, which is the breastplate of the choshen mishpat, ve'efod u'me'il, those are the two that we talked about with regard in Sefer Shmuel, uktonet tashbetz mitznefet ve'avnet, eight clothes ve'asu bigdei kodesh la'aron achicha ulevanav l'chahanoli. So three times in this paragraph, we find the phrase, the purpose, the designation of Aaron as my kohen. This is really the clearest, I think really the first, direct reference to the choice of Aaron as the kohen designate.
Is that because of who he was or what he was about to do? So
why he was chosen is an interesting question, and it's unclear yet as to why that comes about. But it raises for us a problem, two problems. Number one, the Navi talking to Eli said that I made myself known to your father's household while they were in Egypt in the house of Paro, slaves to Paro, and chosen from amongst all the tribes of Israel to be my Kohen. V'chorotam mikol shivtei Yisrael li l'Kohen. It would seem that choice is, Navi is describing it as something which took place in Mitzrayim, and yet, here, the first reference in Chumash that we have to Aaron as Kohen is in Parashat Tetzav. It goes even further than that, it's a little more, even more complicated than that, because Because typically, how we always understood the designation of Aaron as the Kohen, what was the context in which that came about, according to our understanding?
Because Moses was reticent about accepting the role that God...
Tumidrashik. Come back to that in a moment. Where does the choice of Aaron... Why is the choice of Aaron as the Kohen surprising to us?
What happened to Moshe?
No. Well, who should have been the Kohen?
Moshe.
Absolutely not.
Reuven? I mean, like, from that family?
Korah? I was going to say that, Gene.
Definitely not. Right answer to the wrong shear.
That's actually funny.
Right. Who is supposed to be the ones designated to serve in the temple?
The firstborn.
That's why I said Reuben, because I thought his...
Not a function of descendants. Every family would send a representative. Every Bechor was supposed to... Where does the mitzvah Pidyon Bechor come from? Pidyon Aben. What's the whole essence? What's the nature of the mitzvah Pidyon Aben? Right? Why? Because the Bechor is supposed to be the ones doing the Avodah. The Bechor, right, the right of the Bechor to do the Avodah was rescinded, and it was replaced by the specially designated tribe, namely the Kohanim. Where and when do the firstborns lose the right to the Kohuna? Chet Ego. Chet Ego is the clearest indication, because the assumption is, and the Mefarshim clearly point to that. Rashi says it explicitly, that the firstborns were supposed to be the Kohanim. And then, in fact, Aaron's role as a Kohen was only a replacement in the aftermath of the chet of the firstborns.
That's interesting, since he was the one who suggested that they go collect the gold and everything.
That's because they, right. So they come. So Rashi is a whole discussion of Aaron's role in Chet Ego, why that came about, how that came about. We might touch on that a little bit later. But
So how can we just gloss over the fact that he really asked everybody to put in the gold?
We're not going to spend a lot of time on Chet Ego today, because it's really a whole different topic. Rashi says it was a stall tactic. I don't want to get into all the details of Chet Ego, but what is clear about Chet Ego is that all the Mefarshim pointed to that moment as the moment when the firstborns, as a group, lost their entitlement to the service of the temple, and Aaron and his children were designated in their stead. Is there any, from a textual point of view, is there any reference to the fact that the firstborns lost that right in Chet Ego per se? Not clear. One of the hints to it is the fact that when you look at the beginning of Parshat Bamidbar and you look at the census of Bnei Israel that's taken in the desert, 600,000 males, households in the tribes of Israel over three generations, and then you look at the number of firstborns in that community, and you end up with 22,000 something firstborns. The numbers are a challenge, and the Mefarshim struggle with the numbers, because if you think about 600,000 males above the age of 20. Statistically, there should have been a lot more firstborns out of that group. So even if families were, six children per family on average, and half of them male and half of them female, so in every family there should be at least, of that number, let's say take out the females statistically for the firstborns, so you're left with half, and of those half, one-third, so at least 100,000, maybe 50,000 if you like. How do you get to 22,000 firstborn males in a population of 600,000? Just the numbers don't work. So So one of the theories is that when Moshe went and they killed the instigators and the perpetrators of Chet HaEgel, which numbered something to the effect of 24 to 30,000 people, they were all firstborns. Why? Why?
Because then the numbers work out.
Besides that, no, work it backwards. If that's the clue as to where the firstborns were decimated, why was it that all the firstborns were involved in Chet HaEgel? Because if at the core of it, Chet HaEgel was a avoda-centric phenomenon, then at the point prior to the choice of Aaron as the Kohen, who would have been the people to be involved in any kind of ritual service of korbanot in the community? It would have been the firstborn. So who is the logical sector of the community to be involved in a chet like Chet HaEgel? It would have been whoever the local priests were within the tribes and within the families, and they would have been the firstborns of every family. And so there's a logic to the assumption that if Aaron wasn't chosen as the Kohanim until after Chet HaEgel, in fact, Chet HaEgel would have been perpetrated or led by the firstborns of Israel. And hence, the plague that decimated them subsequently would in fact have been from the firstborns. That's one theory as to where the firstborns disappeared to in the numbers. There are other theories, but they're not our issue for now. My issue is how we get to Aaron. How we get to Aaron in Mitzrayim, because it's clear, at least from this part of it, that Aaron doesn't enter into the picture as the Kohen until Chet HaEgel. Now, there's another textual problem. If Aaron doesn't enter into the picture until the aftermath of Chet HaEgel, I have another issue here, which is, what parasha is Chet HaEgel? This, you have to remember parasha Shavuot. That's why I always tell my students the most important and transformative thing that they'll ever do for learning is to learn Parsha Shavuot every week.
And it was after...
Parsha Shavuot is in Parshat.
It was after Matan Torah.
Sorry, Chet HaEgel is in Parshat. Ki Tisa. Chet HaEgel is in Parshat Ki Tisa. Shmos Perek Lamed Dalet. Lamed Bet. Sorry, Perek Lamed Bet and Lamed Gimel.
So it's after the whole Tetzave.
Oh, that's the problem. The problem is the Parshiot Truma and Tetzave are before Parshat Ki Tisa. So if Aaron and his children are chosen in the aftermath of Chet HaEgel, I have a problem in the sequencing of the Parshiot. One of the reasons, although Rashi doesn't say it, but I believe it's one of the major motivations to Rashi, who switches around the order of the events, and who suggests that in fact Chet HaEgel, even though it's written later, Chet HaEgel came first. Right. The famous quote of Rashi, "Eim Mukdama Mochab Torah," centers around. He says that there's no that the chronological sequence of events in the Torah isn't necessarily carved in stone, and therefore there are events in the Torah that are out of chronological sequence. Not an uncommon phenomenon. We saw it in Navi. We had a discussion about the fact that sometimes the Torah will finish one theme and then go to another theme, even though it's chronologically earlier. Right. Truma Tetzav is essentially the theme revolving around the Mishkan and the setting up of the Mishkan in the aftermath of Parshat Mishpatim. There's a sequence that goes from Mishpatim straight into Truma Tetzav. And so even if Chet HaEgel took place first, there is a logic to say, finish the whole discussion of all the mitzvot related to the Mishkan, then let's go back to the storyline in which Chet HaEgel took place at an earlier time. That is entirely possible. But you'd have to rework the sequence of Parshiot. Other Mefarshim, like the Ramban and others, suggest that the Parshiot are in exactly the sequence that they're supposed to be. And so the Mishkan is where it is, and Chet HaEgel is afterwards, in which case Aaron is chosen as the Kohen here, before Chet HaEgel. Chet HaEgel hasn't happened yet, and therefore his choice as Kohen has nothing to do with Chet HaEgel. How we'll figure out some other accounting for the firstborns in some other way, but in the end, says this is a major dispute between Rashi and the Ramban and those who follow in their footsteps to where to put Chet HaEgel. Again, it's.
I'll tell you why. Because it places Aaron in a better position to me, because he's already chosen, and then you have to deal with the aftermath. Right. Otherwise, for me, doesn't flow.
Right. You have a legitimate question with regards to the role of Aaron in Chet HaEgel and how that plays into the rest of Chumash. That's a fair question. It's a complicated question. We're gonna park it for now. Put it in the parking lot of ideas, the questions to come back to. But if we work our way backwards, and my question this morning revolves around where do we find the role of Aaron, because the Navi seems to trace it all the way back to Mitzrayim, and I'm not sure that where that comes from. So we're going to work our way backwards. Let's go one step backwards from Truma Tetzava to Parshat Mishpatim, Shmot Perek Chav Dalet.
Chavdalet, right?
Chavdalet. Mm-hmm.
24.
Perek Chavdalet. Now, I left my. Okay. Sequentially, I've forgotten to set up my whiteboard. Sequentially, follow me through in your mind's eye if you can for a moment. The sequence of events surrounding Matan Torah, the Torah, the revelation at Mount Sinai, the revelation of the Aseret HaDibrot, takes place in Perek Chaf. We're going to come to that in a moment. From the end of, immediately after the revelation and the Ten Commandments in Perek Chaf, there's a series of chapters dealing with laws that Moshe received from God, Be'ela HaMishpatim Asher, Be'ela HaMishpatim Asher Tassim Lifnehem. At the end of that section, that goes from Perichav Aleph, Chav Bet, and Chav Gimel. At the end of that section, in Perichav Dalid, we find the following description. Why is this significant? Because there's a big debate as to, again, same chronological issue. They're all interconnected. Where do you put the story? But in Perek Chav Dalet we find the following. Ve'el Moshe Amar, to Moshe, God had said, Ale al Hashem ata ve'aharon Nadav ve'avihu v'shivim mizikne Yisrael. You come up together with Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu and the 70 elders of Israel, v'ishtachavitem mirechok, and you will bow down from afar. V'nigash Moshe levado el Hashem v'hem lo yigashu. But up to the top of the mountain, up to where God's presence is, there Moshe alone would go, they would not go, v'ha'am lo yalu imo, and neither would the people go up. So we have places along the demarcation lines as to who goes where. Moshe came down, spoke to the people, told them all about God's words and the Mishpatim. The people answered with one voice, and they said, whatever God says, we will do. Pasuk Dalet, Vayichtov Moshe et Divrei Hashem. Moshe wrote these words down, God's words. Vayashkem baboker. They even mizbeach tachataha, built an altar, 12 matzivot, 12 matziva l'12 shivtei Yisrael. Vayishlachat narei b'nei Yisrael vayelu olot, they brought sacrifices, vayizbechu zvachim shlamim la'Hashem, parim. Vaykach Moshe chatzi adam vayasem ba'aganot, vachatzi adam zarak al mizbeach. Moshe threw half the blood on the mizbeach and half the blood he sprinkled over the people. By the way, who's the Kohen in this story?
Moshe.
Which is also true in the Mishkan, because of the first 7 days of the until Aaron is brought and designated and appointed, Moshe served as the Kohen. Pasuk Zayin, Vayikach Sefer HaBrit, Vayikra Bozne Ha'am. He took the book of the covenant and he read it to the people. What book did he take and what did he read? Interesting question. Vayomru Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh V'Nishma. The people said, everything that God says, we will do and we will obey.
Is that what he had just written down?
I would assume that that's what he had just written down, although it doesn't say so, but that's the discussion in the Mefarshim. Let's assume for the moment it's what he had just written down. Divrei Hashem, Vet Kol Mishpatim, he took the Sefer HaBrit, read it to the people, and the answer of the people, Na'aseh V'Nishma. This is the only place we find the reference to Na'aseh V'Nishma, the famous declaration of Na'aseh V'Nishma. This is it. Which is, again, tangential to our discussion, so I'll just mention the question. We are used to understanding that Na'aseh, that the Chiddush, the novelty, the special quality of Na'aseh V'Nishma was that we were willing to accept before we heard the Torah. We were willing to accept on sight unseen. If you look at it in context, it's a lie.
Because he read it.
Because he just read them, Sefer HaBrit.
Except at the top, before that.
Before they said Na'aseh. But Na'aseh V'Nishma, let's assume for the moment, the only reference in Na'aseh V'Nishma, that famous double expression, is here. Moshe's, it's in response to Moshe reading Sefer HaBrit. So there's a big discussion as to what Sefer HaBrit is. Rashi says it's all of... There's two discussions. What is Sefer HaBrit, and when is this chapter taking place? Because if I read it in sequence, I have the Aseret HaDibrot, and all of Sefer, and all of Parshat Mishpatim. And if, as the Ramban says, I take that in sequence, and I write down the Aseret HaDibrot, and all of Parshat Mishpatim, and then I read it to the people, that's quite a lot. That's a fairly big sample of the mitzvot in the Torah. If that's the Aseret, the Sefer HaBrit, then when they said Na'aseh V'Nishma,
they already had it.
They knew exactly what was going to be in the Torah. There was no questions, ands, ifs, or buts. They knew what the Aseret HaDibrot were. They knew what the Sefer HaBrit was. They knew what Parshat Mishpatim was. They had it all. Now they looked at it, they analyzed it, they decided, they read the contract, they read the fine print, and they said, Na'aseh V'Nishma. Option one. Option two, which is Rashi's suggestion, is that this whole episode, again, is out of sequence. And that really, it belongs in pre-Matan Torah chapter, back in chapter 19, before the Aseret HaDibrot. And if it's before the Aseret HaDibrot, what did Moshe read to them in Sefer HaBrit? So there Rashi says he read them Sefer Breshit and the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim and the three mitzvot that they got back in Mara, Shabbos, Parah Adumah, or Kibbut Avim, depending on how you look at it, right, a couple of mitzvot that they had back there, and the mitzvah they got up of the man, that was Sefer HaBrit. So I always like that answer because it's classic. Moshe read them a storybook, and they said Na'aseh V'Nishma, and then he walloped them with 613 mitzvot. It's classic. Sefer HaBrit, Na'aseh V'Nishma, Breishit, Yetziat Mitzrayim, it's all the fun parshiyot, right? Then, Na'aseh V'Nishma, good, now you get Vayikra. Think about it.
Is this all written in stone? All when it says that he read from something?
Says he read something. He read Sefer HaBrit. I mean, what was it written on? Parchment. The only thing written on stone is the Luchot, and according to Rashi, he hasn't gotten the Luchot yet. This is pre-Matan Torah. According to the Ramban, this is post-Matan Torah. There's a huge debate as to what exactly was this Sefer HaBrit. But in all cases, they're Moshe's enacting some kind of brit with them. Vayikach Moshe et adam veyizrok al ha'am. Moshe sprinkles the blood over the people. Vayomer hinei dam habrit asher karat Hashem imachem al kol advarim ha'ela. This is the blood of the brit, the covenant. There's a third possibility of Sefer HaBrit, which I actually like the best, and that is that at the end of Sefer Vayikra, there's a section that's bracketed off from the rest of Sefer Vayikra by virtue of the fact that it is chronologically out of place. It's the Parshiot of Bahar and Bechukotai, which begin Bahar Sinai and end Ela Divrei Brit Asher Karatitam Bahar Sinai. There is a medrash that says that the Sefer HaBrit that Moshe read to them was the Parshiot of Bahar and Bechukotai only. Were pre-Matan Torah, but he read them Bahar and Bechukotai, which means that they don't know what the mitzvot of the Torah are yet, but what they got was the Tochacha, the consequences of obedience or disobedience to the Torah. So they don't know what the laws are, but they know what the consequences of disobeying them are. And then they said, Nasa
Panishma. So the reward and punishment before right. the action.
Right. That, and that's a very powerful suggestion. That's a medrash. In the meantime, next the key is the next pasuk. Vayal, Moshe, Va'aron, Avinadav, Va'avihu, V'shivim, Mizikne Yisrael. Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, 70 elders of Israel, they go up. Vayuot Elokei Yisrael, they have this vision of God. Skip the next two psukim because I don't know what they mean anyway. Pasuk Yudbet, throne of God and visions of sapphire. Skip it. Pasuk Yudbet, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, Ale Elai Hahara Ve'yesham. Come up to the mountain and be there. I will give you the stones, the luchot, and the Torah and the mitzvot. This is the source that Rashi uses to say that we're pre-Matan Torah. Moshe Yoshua Misharato. Moshe Yoshua, his misharet goes up with him. Vayal Moshe al har Elokim. Ve'azkenim ama, shvu lanu bazeh. To the zkenim he turned and he said, you stay here till we come back. And I will leave you with two people in charge. V'hinei Aharon v'chur imachem mi bal dvarim yigash alehem. I leave you in the capable hands of Aaron and Chur.
Who's
Chur? Chur. Who is Chur? Interesting question. We never hear from him again. Susie?
Is he the son of somebody?
Yeah, definitely the son of somebody. That is true. But Chur is interesting because there's a medrash that says that when they came to Aaron, the reason why Aaron comes back to your question, Adina, the reason why Aaron was so willing to help them with Chet Egel, but at the same time to stall, was because they went to Chur first, and when Chur refused, they killed him, and then they went to Aaron, and they said, "No, you're next." Right, so at that point, Aaron said, "Okay, you know, bring me your gold, and we'll see what comes out of it." But the reason why the Medrash picks up on the Chur is because you see here that when Moshe went up the mountain, he left two people in charge. When he comes back down, the only person he comes to is Aaron. We never hear from Chur again ever. He disappears. So the assumption is that something happened to him in the context of Chet HaEgel, because they were left in the charge of Aaron and Chur. Actually, we do hear from him again.
Was that a midrash that killed him? That they went to him first?
Yeah, right. Rashi quotes it. Vayal Moshe lahar v'echas et ha'anan et ha'har v'yishkon kvod Hashem al har Sinai v'chaseu ha'anan sheshit yamim v'yikra el Moshe v'yom ha'shvim yitoch ha'anan. Moshe goes up the mountain, 6 days he's on the mountain, seventh day Hashem calls him, and there's a great vision, marek kvod Hashem ke'esh ochelet b'rosh ha'har. There's a vision of God's consuming fire at the top of the mountain, and Moshe goes into that fire, he goes into the cloud, and he is there for 40 days and 40 nights, v'him Moshe b'har. So this is clearly a description of the events surrounding Moshe's being on the mountain. Machloket Rashi and Ramban is what happened on day one. Did Moshe go up the mountain, receive the Ten Commandments, come back down, or did they hear the Ten Commandments, come back down, and then we have this episode, or is this all pre-Matan Torah? But in all cases, what's the role of Aaron?
He's down there.
He's like the deputy.
Yeah. He's a deputy, he's in charge, He's there to help them. Is he a Kohen?
No. Maybe a Kohen to Moshe.
Maybe a Kohen to Moshe. We're not sure what he is. We're not sure what he is. Right?
You cannot have two Kohanim.
Well, Moshe's role as a Kohen, that's true. After it comes back to the mountain, Moshe seems to take the role of a Kohen, so we assume. On the other hand, you have a Kohen Gadol, but then you have lots of Kohanim. There's many Kohanim. There's only one Kohen Gadol, right? There's many Kohanim. So what's Aaron's role in all of this? What's his status?
Well,
Hashem, another interesting verse.
Can't he be a regular Kohen in Moshe the Kohen?
He could. Gadol? He could. He certainly could. Take a look in Perek Yud Tet. Just go back a couple of psukim. Describing the pre-Matan Torah description. Again, you have to take Perek Chav Dalet and superimpose it into the events of Perek Yud Tet. Describing Mount Har Sinai with all of its fire and brimstone and the shofar sounds and the cloud and the fire all happening at the same time. Perek Yud Tet, Pasuk Yud Chet. Let's start from. V'Har Sinai Ashan Kulo. Har Sinai is ablaze, full of smoke. Mipnei she'yarada lav Hashem ba'esh, because on the mountain God had come down in the form of fire. We saw that in Chav Dalet also. How does Chav Dalet end? With the description of a consuming fire on the top of the mountain. Ve'alu ashano ki eshen akivshan ve'yachrad kol ha'har ma'od. Vayi kol ha'shofar alech v'chazek ma'od, Moshe yedaber v'alakim yanenu b'kol, great shofar is sounding, Moshe speaks, God answers. Vayered Hashem al har Sinai avosh ha'har, vayikva Hashem l'moshe avosh ha'har ve'al Moshe, God called to Moshe from the top of the mountain. He said, come up. Moshe goes up. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, red ha'ed ba'am. Moshe goes up. What does God tell him?
Go down.
Go down. It's a conversation. What's going on? Moshe's going up and down the mountain several times. Right? God calls him, says, come up. He comes up. God says, now go down. And warn them. Pen yersu el Hashem lirot v'nafal mimenu rav. Warn them that they can't come up the mountain. Warn the people that they should not touch the mountain. V'gam ha-kohanim manigashim el Hashem yitkadashu. Now there's a whole core group of people called the Kohanim that are nigash, that approach God, that serve God, that come to the Mizbech, that serve sacrifice on the Mizbech. There's a whole group of Kohanim. They're used to coming closer. Not here. Yitkadashu. They have to stay away. Ben yifrotz b'hem Hashem, because God will be angry at them too. So not only do the people stay away, the people are used to not getting too close, but the Kohanim, who are used to coming closer, in this case, right, remember the story of Nadav and Avihu, the Kohanim are used to coming close, not here. You tell them, stay away. Vayomer Moshe al Hashem, lo yuchal ha'am la'alot al ha'sinai, ki atah ha'idot abano lemoa, gbelat ta'ah v'kidashto. Moshe says to God, God, this is the third time you want me to tell the people to stay off the mountain. They're not coming anywhere. They're not coming up to the mountain. They're staying away. Don't worry. You already told them this. God says, no. Vayomer elav Hashem, lech red, go down, and tell them. Ve'alita atah ve'aharon imach. You alone come up with Aaron. The Kohanim v'ha'am al yersu la'alot al Hashem pen yifrotz bam. But the Kohanim and the people, they have to stay below. They can't approach. They have to be warned. Vayered Moshe el ha'am vayomer alehem. So Moshe went down the mountain and he said to them whatever he said to them. Vayedaber alekim at kol adrim eilu lemor. And then we have the Aseret HaDibrot. So what's going on?
Like Aaron either goes up or down or he stays down. It's very hard to understand exactly where he is.
Granted, it's not unclear where Aaron is, but what's interesting to my mind, into our context here, is what's the relationship between Aaron and the Kohanim?
He's above them.
Above them?
He's separate.
And or separated them. There's two different issues here. There's Aaron, and then there's the Kohanim. So if Aaron is the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim and his children are the Kohanim, so who are we talking about? Nadav and Avihu, Elazar v'Itamar? Or are we talking about an entire group of people called the Kohanim who are used to coming up, who are used to doing the service, who are used to doing the Avodah, and Hashem is telling them, not here, you stay away, stay off the mountain. This is, right? Who are this group of Kohanim that are...
We're talking about Zignei Yisrael.
Right? The Zignei Yisrael and the Kohanim, but they're also separated. The Kohanim have their...
Born.
So the Kohanim, although it's never defined for us, these are the sources that the Mefarshim point to suggest that these Kohanim are constantly referenced as a group of people that are used to doing avoda. Who's used to doing avoda? Who are typically the priests of a society? So let's say the firstborns, because they're clearly separate from Aaron. Understand the problem? Then I could understand that in the aftermath of Chet HaEgel, where they violate the integrity of the position of that role of the Kohanim, they are fired, if you will, and Aaron and his children are put in their stead. But none of this would put Aaron as designated as the Kohen back in Mitzrayim.
But Aaron was the firstborn too, wasn't he the older brother?
That may have been, but his role is not because he's a firstborn. His role is because he's...
As Moshe's brother.
Yeah. In this context, his role is not as the Kohen. His role is his relationship to Aaron. His relationship to Moshe starts in Yetziat Mitzrayim. What's Aaron's role in Yetziat Mitzrayim? Remember, this is the aftermath of Yetziat Mitzrayim. What's Aaron's role in Yetziat Mitzrayim itself, in the process of the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim?
He's the spokesperson for Moshe.
He's designated by God to be Moshe's right-hand man, to be his spokesperson. So wouldn't it be surprising to us that as Moshe's going up the mountain to receive the Aseret HaDibrot, Aaron's going to go with him? Aaron has been at his right hand since the day they left Mitzrayim in the role of
spokesperson.
Communicator. Excuse me?
But he left him down.
So in this case, God instructs Moshe to leave Aaron at a certain point. Right? Whatever Moshe at the top of the mountain goes alone. But my issue isn't where Aaron is on the mountain. My issue is where Aaron is in relationship to the rest of the Kohanim. If Aaron's role in this whole story is the designated as help, right-hand man, spokesperson, Aaron v'chicha yenevi'echa role of Aaron, when does he become the Kohen? He doesn't become the Kohen until Parshat Tetzaveh, arguably before or after Chet HaEgel. But not in Mitzrayim. So where does the Navi come from? Come to the statement, Haniglo nigleti al beit avicha, be'eretz Mitzrayim le'beit paro,
Uvachor to mikol shiftei Yisrael l'chahen li. Maybe God knew that the Bnei Yisrael were going to sin. He had already Mitzrayim chosen that Aaron was going to be
the. You understand the problem with that kind of answer? Right?
Sounds so Jewish.
Yeah. No. That God. Any answer predicated on the assumption that God pre-chooses based on the assumption that He knows, quote unquote, that we're going to sin, creates for us a larger problem of
free will.
Which I'm not. Don't want to go there.
Could it be the whole episode of the whole Exodus,
But again, I come back to this. Is he a Kohen or isn't he a Kohen? According to the Navi,
that the Kohen is like the spokesperson for Moshe. I mean, you don't really know the definition of this Kohen. Why can't he just be
I know the definition of the word Kohen as it's used by the Navi, which is the source of our problem. The definition of the word Kohen is laktir ktoret, la'alot al mizbeach, laset taifod. That's what the Navi is telling Eli. None of that is applicable to the role of Aaron here. He's not on the ktoret, he's not on the mizbeach, he's not wearing an ephod, this is not the role of the Kohen. So where does that concept come from? I'll go one step further. If we're looking for the role of Aaron in Mitzrayim, let's go back. We're working our way backwards. Let's go back to Moshe at the Sneh. Excuse me?
Nothing. You can't keep track of where we've been.
That's because we're going backwards.
We're going backwards. That's just the way it is.
In where it is back here in the Chumash, and it kind of evolves to something else, Matan Torah.
It's hard to define.
You use words like that all the time.
Yeah, true, but.
Okay.
Not in Tanakh, not in Chumash. Typically, usually things mean. Words can change and roles can change historically, but in the context of Chumash, that would be a hard thing to do. Let's take a look for a moment in Perek Dalet, Moshe at the Sneh.
Chapter 4. We're going back. Chapter Dalet.
Perek Dalet.
That's way back.
Yeah, it's way back. Then we're going to jump all the way forward. 1,000 years.
Which pasuk?
Pasuk. That's a good question. What pasuk? Perek Gimel and Dalet together is Moshe's conversation with God at the burning bush. And at the very end of this dialogue, remember Moshe is standing there saying, giving all kinds of excuses for why he doesn't want to go.
The reluctant Navi.
Reluctant Navi. Doesn't want to go. Doesn't want to take on, yeah. Who am I? Well, I can't speak. I'm not an Egyptian. I don't know the language. I don't know the people. The people aren't going to trust me. I'm not one of them. Moshe's got it from both sides. He's not Egyptian enough to gain legitimacy in the house of Paro. He's not Israelite enough to gain legitimacy in the eyes of the people. He's a nomad.
I thought he was Egyptian.
He is, but he's in exile. He hasn't lived in Mitzrayim for 60 years. He left when he was, what, 10, 18, 20? He's now 80. He's 60 years later. One of the most fascinating interpretations of the phrase Kvad Peh Uchvad Lashon Anochi is the Rashbam, who says it means that he was not well-versed in Egyptian language. Why? He's been living in Midian. Ask him to go and speak Midianese in a diplomatic mission. He might be more versed. He hasn't spoken Egyptian in 60 years, according says the Rashbam. It might be his mother tongue, but he hasn't spoken it in 60 years.
But he's having trouble talking anyway.
So that's the discussion. What does Kfat Peh mean?
Yeah.
Rashi says it's some sort of a speech impediment.
Right.
And the Mefarshim have great trouble with that interpretation because
There's
no... Why on earth Moshe have a speech impediment? And why would a speech impediment lead him to have an issue with going to Paro? Where if it's a language of... And why would Aaron's help be of any help there? Right? The issue, says Rosh Pram, is one of language. Which is kvad peh uchvad lashon. Lashon is language. So if he's not versed in the and fluid in the language of Egyptian, how is he going to speak to the peoples, to Mitzrayim? So God says to him, fine, you be God, the Navi, you be the authority, the messenger from God, and let Aaron be your spokesperson. He'll be your translator, your interpreter, your translator. Aaron Achicha Yadav Yadav. Which makes much more sense in the context of the story.
Yeah. What language does he speak to Aaron in?
They can communicate. There's a difference between being able to speak, there's a difference being able to communicate, and being able to negotiate.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
He's being a diplomat.
Okay? The language of the Paro requires a negotiator. Moshe's not a negotiator.
No, he
remembers, you know what happens to an American who makes Aliyah at the age of 10? And he lives in an Israeli environment with Israeli parents and Israeli schools. He never speaks a word of English. And then you come to him at the age of 50 and you start talking to him in English. Can he communicate? Can he speak English?
He can speak English, but he can't negotiate.
Right. But diplomacy is a different language.
That's right.
There's a different fluidity to it. So Moshe says, Kvad peh uchvad lashon anochi. I'm not comfortable in this environment. He says, okay, you want to translate? You want a negotiator? You'll have Aaron. Aaron is an Egyptian in that regard, versed in the language of the court. But to communicate, he can communicate. Mm-hmm. So be that as it may, Pasuk Yud Gimel, at the end of all of this, Moshe says, Misa, Kvad Per Chvad Lashon, Amin Parak Dalid, Pasuk Yud Bet. God says to him, Ata lech v'anochi ayeh impicha v'hoeticha asher tedaber. You, before God said to him about Aaron, first he said, I'm Kvad Peh Uchvad Lashon. So God says, what are you talking about? Mi sam peh le'adam, mi asu milem. Who makes man speak? I'll tell you what to speak, and I will instruct you, and you'll speak what I tell you. To which Moshe finally says, Vayomer, Bi Hashem, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Shlachna biyad tishlach. Translated literally, it means, send, please, biyad tishlach, in the hands of whom you will send. Meaning, without Rashi, meaning,
whoever you send, I'll deal with.
No,
send
I'll deal
who
with.
You want to
send anybody else.
Oh.
Shlachna biyad tishlach. Send anybody. I'm not going.
That's a refusal.
Yes, it's his last argument. Shlachna biyad tishlach. Send anybody whom you will send. Just not me.
you supposed to do that?
So,
no. So in the next verse, Vayicha af Hashem b'Moshe. God finally gets angry. All of the arguments, back and forth, and everything said, God gets angry. Vayomer, and he says, Halo Aaron achicha halevi. Aaron, your brother, the Levi, yadati ki daber yadaberu. I will instruct him. He will speak. V'gam hu yetzei l'kratecha. He's coming out to greet you. V'ra'acha v'samach b'libo. He'll see you. He'll rejoice. V'dibarta elav v'samta tatorim b'fiv. You will speak these words to him. V'anochi yeim picha v'im piu. I will be with your mouth. I will be with his mouth. V'oreit yetchem et asher ta'asu. To which Rashi asks the simple question. He doesn't ask it, but he implies it. How did Aaron enter into the answer to the question? The refusal was, God send whomever you want. What's God's answer? God's angry, and he says, I will send you, and I'll send Aaron with you. How did Aaron enter into the conversation?
Because he's coming out to greet him.
Because he's coming out to greet him, therefore he's going to be the... So Rashi adds two words. Shlachna biyad tishlach. In the question, in the refusal, says Rashi, "Shlachna biyad mi sha'ata ragil nishlach." Send the one you're used to sending. Vehu Aharon. Says Rashi, in the refusal of Moshe, there's an implication. What's implied?
Send my brother.
That Aharon is the right choice. He's in Mitzrayim. The people know him.
He
grew up with the people. He knows how to speak. He knows the language of diplomacy. You've got the wrong guy. You've got the exiled brother who doesn't speak Egyptian, who doesn't fit in any society. To the Midianites, I'm an Egyptian. To the Jews, I'm an Egyptian. To the Egyptians, I'm an Israelite. No matter how I do slice it, I'm an outsider. You want to send somebody, the logical choice is Aaron. Right? And then God gets angry. And he says, I'm sending you. You want Aaron too? I'll give you Aaron too. But Rashi throws in two words that are really remarkable. He says, Biyad mi shata regil lishlach. Aaron is the right choice, not just for all the reasons I just described. Aaron is the right choice, says Moshe, because...
He's already coming, or he did come.
Because you're used to sending him. And that's a remarkable statement. What do you mean you're used to sending him? What are you used to sending him?
Where did he send him before?
You understand the problem?
Serving God in Egypt.
Understand the problem? Here's the remez. This is the closest hint we have in Chumash that Aaron... We know nothing about at this point in the Chumash. We worked our way backwards. This is the earliest reference. That Aaron has some stature, some status, some role already that Moshe is aware of. To the point where Moshe says to God, if you send Aaron, the people will accept him with open arms. You send me, and the people are going to say, God spoke to you, you're a nothing, you're an outsider, you're an Egyptian, you're a runaway, you're a slave, you're an... Send Aaron. Aaron makes sense. Aaron would be the one we expect to be the one to be the messenger. Why?
So we have no
proof to this theory other than allusions, hints. Hints at Moshe's conversation at the burning bush, hints at Eli's comment at the the Navi's comment to Eli that Aaron had some role already back in Mitzrayim. The explicit reference to it comes 1,000 years later.
It also says here Aaron a Levi.
Correct, because he's a Levi. Moshe is a Levi, Aaron is his brother.
That's what they were.
Right? Cohen is not, but a Levi he is. The explicit reference to it comes 1,000 years later. Yechezkel. The Navi Yechezkel is the clearest source we have that Aaron had some role to play in Mitzrayim. One more flip. I have 3 minutes left. So let's jump to Yechezkel Perek Chaf. beginning of Perek Chaf is a conversation Yechezkel sitting in exile after the destruction of the the Beit HaMikdash and the fall of the kingdom, and the Jews are exiled. It's 1,000 years later. Yechezkel is sitting there, and the people come to him with a question. And whatever the context of this question is, I'm less interested in that for now. But he gives them a very harsh answer to their question, and he says the following. Gives them a history lesson. Perikop is a history of the Jewish people. Starting with Pasuk Hey. Yamarta Alehem. This is what you will tell Bnei Yisrael. God says to Yechezkel, this is what you will tell these people. Koma Hashem Elokim. Biyom Bachori BeYisrael. The day I chose Israel. What is the day I chose Israel?
Sinai.
Either Sinai or the period of time we're talking about, which is Yitziat Mitzrayim and Mamon HaSinai. But for clarifying it further, I made myself known to the people of Israel where?
Crossing the Red Sea, the 10 plagues.
Be'eretz Mitzrayim.
In the land of Mitzrayim.
Be'eretz Mitzrayim. We're not at the 10 plagues yet. In the land of Egypt. V'sayadi lehem lemor ani Hashem elokechem. I talked to them. I spoke with them. And I said to them, I am Hashem your God. Bayom ahu nesati adi lehem lotziyam me'eretz Mitzrayim. That day I took an oath. I lifted up my hand. I wanted to take them out of Egypt. To the land flowing with milk and honey, to the land desirable amongst all the lands. I made only one request of them. They want to leave Egypt, they have to do one thing. Get rid of the idols of Egypt. Get rid of the abominations. Abandon the culture of Egypt. You want to leave Egypt? Here's the deal. The first thing you have to do is say, I'm not Egyptian. I don't serve Egyptian gods, and I don't serve Egyptian idols. If you do that, I'm willing to take you out of Egypt. Why? Ani Hashem Elokechem. What do you think the answer of the people was to this request? Vayamuvi, they rebelled against me. V'lo avu lishmo elai, they refused to listen to me. Ishichikutzeinahem lo ishlichu vet gilu lemitzrayim lo azavu, they didn't abandon their gods, they didn't abandon their idols. And therefore my response was, to pour out my wrath against them, lechalot api bahem, to destroy them, betoch eretz Mitzrayim, while they're still in Egypt. This is pre-Yitziat Mitzrayim, pre the plagues, pre Moshe. This is an attest of what came much earlier. They were sent a message, get rid of the idols and we'll leave Egypt. And they refused. So God said that they deserved to be destroyed. But he didn't destroy them. Why didn't he? I acted for my name's sake, not to destroy them in the eyes of the nations in whom midst they are, and therefore so I took them out of Egypt and I brought them to the Midbar. And the rest of this chapter are all the other subsequent times that they rebelled against God. But it's a fascinating episode that we have no reference to in Chumash, that long before Moshe came along, God had come to them in Mitzrayim through the agency of some communication of a Navi and said to them, if you want to leave Egypt, you got to get rid of the idols. And they refused. God wanted to destroy them. So the Mefarshim on the story by us, by Shmuel, and we can go back to Shmuel, Mefarshim by us point to these verses and say, that's the reference to Aaron. Through whom did God speak to Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim and offer the message that if they want to leave Egypt, they have to get rid of the idolatry? Who was their symbol? Who was their Navi? Their Navi was Aaron. And when Moshe comes to God at the burning bush, at the Snen, he says, Shlach na biyad tishlach, Moshe knows full well, for years, for generations, for years, they've been turning to Aaron as their Navi. He's been the one telling them they're going to leave Egypt, but only if they get rid of their idols, only if they worship God. Ani Hashem Elokechem. Aaron's been their Navi. You're going to come to me, the outsider, the exile, the nothing, the nobody of the burning bush, and I'm going to come back to them in Mitzrayim and say, I'm the one? And they're going to turn and say, you? You, Isvav, you exile, you Egyptian, your brother is the one. He should be, he's the from one. He's the one with the long beard. He's the one who's got the communication with God. He's the Navi. Shlach na miyad tishlach. Understand what's going on?
Little competition.
That says the Mitzvah of David, Mitzvah to Old Mepharshim. He said, when the Navi says to Eli, that I revealed myself, Haniglo nigleiti al Beit Avicha, when I revealed myself to Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, was to whom? To your great 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 grandfather? Was to Aaron. But to Aaron in what role?
As a Navi.
As a Navi. Not the Kohen. But look at the Pasuk. Komar Hashem. I revealed myself to your father's house in Mitzrayim, in the house of Pharaoh. And I chose him from amongst all the tribes of Israel to be my Kohen. We've assumed all along that that's one progression. I revealed myself to your father in Mitzrayim and chose him as my Kohen. But it seems, and that's simple, the simplest way to understand the verse, that there are two separate statements here. Aaron did serve as a Navi in Mitzrayim. That we know. We have evidence in Yechezkel. We have evidence in Shmos. Hints to it in Shmos. Proof of it in Yechezkel. That Aaron was chosen in Mitzrayim, not as the Kohen, but as the Navi. Moshe enters into the picture with all of the complexity of the relationship between Aaron and Moshe, which is why God says to Moshe, you think that Aaron is going to be jealous that you're usurping his role? He's coming out to greet you. He's going to come out and embrace you with open arms because you're going to be the Kohen. He's going to be yours. You're going to be the Navi. He's going to be your interpreter. He's going to get a demotion out of this. And he's going to do that with open arms. And then, later on, Aaron becomes chosen as the Kohen when, in the aftermath of Chet Ha'Egel, the Bechorot are removed from the role, the distinction gets given to Aaron, and therefore there's two separate statements. That's a function of his role as a Navi. Was chosen stage two as the Kohen Gadol, and to begin the descendants of Kohen.
He used to be a nice guy.
Moral of the story is.
And when does the switch come from being the Levi to the Kohen? It just happens?
When he's chosen. Kohen is a subset of Levi.
Okay.
Once he's appointed, he and his sons are designated to be the Kohanim, so the Kohanim are a subset of the tribe of Levi. Right? Levi is a tribe.
Right.
Kohen is a function.
And Moshe and Aaron were part of Shevet Levi.
They were part of Shevet Levi. Levi is a tribe like any other tribe.
Right.
Kohuna is a function. The same way that the Kohanim originally were supposed to be the firstborns of every tribe, now they're the descendants of Aaron carved out of Shevet Levi.
That's pretty good.
Very interesting.
Glad you're doing that.